My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Jake Goldberg, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Great to be here.
For many architects, it takes years to establish a firm that attracts the right clients. Architects have incredible vision and design talents, and many of us have learned how to build pretty successful businesses. But often understood and rarely discussed are the efforts placed on growing and aligning relationships with talented general contractors. GCs who understand design intent and the means and methods to execute can be an integral part of growing a successful architecture firm. For 35 years, Jake Goldberg, founder and president of Chicago-based Goldberg General Contracting, has been collaborating with leading custom residential architects. Chicago is known for its architectural legacy, and the demands placed on builders to execute are equally as pressured as those placed on us architects to create original designs. For more than three decades, Jake has learned the importance of strategically understanding what is needed to successfully partner with us architects. Establishing a professional design reputation takes years of talent, effort, and creativity. Relationships are integral to the successful outcomes of great designs, and learning to partner with GCs can help you achieve your goals of getting your unique designs built. And so I've invited Jake Goldberg to join me today on the podcast to have that conversation, to talk about how architects and GCs can successfully not just work together, but partner up to become more successful, to help one another build, you know, more successful projects. And so that's what I'm hoping to have that conversation today, Jake.
Oh, it's great to be invited to join you, Mark. I appreciate it.
Before we jump into that conversation, I want to know more about you. You said before we jumped on here and I introduced you this way, 35 years. This year will be 35 years for your firm. And so I want to know where all of that started. Before, you know, before the 35 years, what inspired you to do what you do? How did you discover your passion for that? Maybe who and what inspired you to do what you do?
Well, it's hard to believe it has been 35 years. I started my firm fresh out of college at University of Illinois in Champaign. And I was a liberal arts econ student, but really enjoyed getting some introduction to architecture classes at U of I and taking some real estate finance classes. I always kind of have to speak about my mother and father when I think about how I got here. And my father was an architect who he was in the Navy, and he got a GI scholarship to U of I in Champaign, and he went there and did less than a semester and was kind of uninspired by the architecture school there, and had heard a lot about IIT and Mies.
Yeah.
And so he gave up his scholarship to transfer to IIT. my mom is an interior designer. And so was very much part of the dinner table conversation to talk about design and construction and the building department. And my dad, as a struggling architect, which I think many architects know, it's challenging to support your family as an architect, even regardless of how passionate and committed you are. So my dad, when I was in high school and college, was doing some real estate work to supplement his income. And I grew up in Lakeview in Chicago, and many of the surrounding neighborhoods were being gentrified. And my dad was buying sort of rundown apartment buildings. Some had some retail, and cleaning them up, rehabbing them, and, you know, raising the rents, and just trying to make a rundown building, bring it back to its maybe its former glory, and also, you know, increase the value of his asset to either sell it or hang on to it, but in the vein of, you know, supplementing his architect income. And that's really how I got started, because I would go to these buildings. My dad was managing like 80 apartments, and anything that broke, or if like an apartment got broken into, we had to repair the front door, or a pipe froze, we had to like learn how to solder and fix the pipe. That's kind of how I got exposed to construction. And then I became sort of the general grunt foreman of a lot of these renovation projects of these, you know, low cost rental apartments. And that was really my initial exposure. And then I really enjoyed being a carpenter. And so through high school and college, I worked as a sort of carpenter handyman, which I really got a lot of satisfaction out of. Went to U of I, wasn't really sure what I was going to do, but as I got close to graduating, was inspired by the idea of buying these sort of beautiful older buildings that had been neglected, and bringing them back to their former glory. And, you know, really I was thinking I wanted to kind of get into real estate development. So I started my company at 22 in 1987. And I started doing small additions and like bungalow attic conversions. And I really just fell in love with the art of building for building's sake. Did a few small speculation real estate deals, and learned very quickly how you had to have a strong stomach to put your money and your reputation on the line, and then sort of wait for someone to buy a property. If we did maybe like a condo conversion or a two flat or something, and it was very stressful and risky. And the money that you stood to make was not necessarily that lucrative. So, and so I really just fell in love with, you know, working with the tools and building things and restoring things. And I decided that I really just wanted to be a general contractor. And when I first told my dad, you know, maybe my first year out of college, that I wanted to just be a general contractor, he actually tried to talk me out of it, which is kind of funny. Because as an architect, he just realized how risky it was to be a general contractor and all the pitfalls of, you know, not getting paid or getting sued or running into problems. And so he really like was surprised and tried to talk me out of it. But in retrospect, it's just been really gratifying, and it's been a great career.
So the projects that your dad was doing, renovating those buildings, and that was your first exposure to the industry, getting in there and getting your hands dirty and sort of learning the trade. Was your father the GC on those projects? So he was buying them, designing them. Was he also managing the construction on those projects, managing the teams?
He was the boss, and he didn't really have the budget to hire a GC. So it was kind of like, you know, you just take it all under your wing and you just do it yourself.
So interesting that the exposure to that work inspired you, sort of the seeds of the origin of what you do today, Was there any possibility that you would go to the design side? Both your mom and dad are designers. Your dad's an architect. Your mom's an interior designer. Was there ever any thought that you would go to the design side?
Actually, no, which sounds surprising. But I think that our reputation as a firm is very much associated with the fact that we have the design perspective of what we build because of my background and our sort of architectural interest, you know, not just about physically building things, but the, like you said in the beginning, the legacy of Chicago. I learned, you know, early on about how prominent Chicago is in the world of modern architecture. And, you know, we live in a very relevant city that is recognized worldwide for the achievements of the architects here. And so the short answer is, even though I'm not a designer, nor do we ever try to profess to be a design build company, I think a large, a big reason that architects and designers enjoy working with us is our understanding of the context of the design, because, you know, it's putting light in the shadows and all the execution of the details in reference to understanding where the design is coming from is what I think is one of the things that really distinguishes us.
Yeah. As an architect, that is so important, to find a partner, a contractor that isn't just a good builder, right? Somebody who's could be great at putting the pieces together, the means and methods, but to find somebody like you, Jake, who not only understands architects and the mindset of an architect, right? Your dad's an architect. You grew up seeing how architects think, right? Architects think differently. And to have that skill as a general contractor is so beneficial to the architect. When I grew up in a blue collar family, my dad was an auto mechanic. My uncles were contractors. When I wanted to become an architect, and I told my uncles that I was going to be an architect, they were like, "Why?" you know, because they had conflicts with architects, right?
Yeah.
That it was tradition that architects and contractors didn't get along. They didn't understand right. One another. And so I grew up that way. And so when I decided to become an architect, the first thing I did was go get a job with a contractor, because I wanted to understand why, right? I wanted to understand how contractors thought about architects. And that benefited me so much in my profession to understand the mindset of the general contractor. And you have that same thing, but the reverse of that. You understand how architects think, so you can have that conversation and be able to not only design to build great buildings, but understand the importance of the design and the reference of the design and the origin of the design. It makes a contractor like you so valuable.
So when we look at a set of drawings today, which is, you know, we our company's funny in that we definitely prefer or have a preference for modern construction, but we also have a reputation for historic preservation. And the first thought was be kind of like those two don't necessarily go together, because they seem maybe to a layperson to sort of be opposites. But I think when you get into either, you realize that of why it makes sense that you could potentially be good at both. But when we get asked to look at a set of drawings today, often, let's say for a modern house, often they're the schematic stages of design, because we often get asked to be part of the team or seriously considered part of the team in the early planning stages. We can look at a plan for a new house or commercial space and sort of see beyond the schematic drawings, because one, we have the context of having built so much modern projects, but then also we may have a pre-existing, we very may well have a pre-existing relationship with that particular architect and know how they like to detail things.
Yeah.
So we're not just sort of looking at the literal lines on the page or on the screen and just looking at what's in front of us, but we're seeing everything that's not in front of us, meaning from a pricing perspective or a means and methods perspective, due to our experience and our context of what, how we're seeing the design, we know what we're going to have to do to make that, flesh that out and make it a reality for all the things that aren't there, you know, especially in the schematic stages, so that like when we put a budget together, the designer and the owner know that we see the full picture and are going to hopefully capture it with, let's say, the budget or the schedule, or bringing in the right tradespeople to pull it off. And so it's all about what's not there.
yeah, very much so. Yeah. I've found that in my experience. I've done high-end residential for years, and there are two different methods that contractors use. One is looking at the drawings and pricing the drawings, right? And knowing what's missing, but not pricing what's missing. And try to get the job that way, and then make it up later on change orders, on all the things that they know are missing. They'll catch it later, and
right.
and maybe they make more money that way, and maybe they don't, but they certainly don't make a better relationship, because that ends in conflict, just conflict over and over and over again.
Well, to our own detriment, we tend to be Jeff Berry is my partner. We tend to sort of over anticipate, because we know, and that often is disappointing to the team, because you know there's always a budget, right, no matter who the client is. And you know, if they're interviewing multiple GCs, we've lost many a job because we're not telling them what they want to hear on the budget.
Right. Exactly.
But we're like telling them what we know they're going to have to face eventually. So, you know, the longer we've been in business, the more people are seeking us out, like both architects and clients, for
right.
what we're able to do, instead of, you know, like who's going to tell us the price that's most appealing and that makes us feel good in the short term.
right. Projects, the pain of the reality of what things cost is going to happen either sooner or later, right? And so to do it the way you do it, by providing a realistic price and a budget, so everybody understands this is what this thing's going to probably cost. And people may be disappointed at first, right? And they have to come to terms with that big number. But the project, once they do that, right? They experience that pain and they come to terms with it. And now they've started building a relationship with this team. That's behind them. Right? That pain of what that thing is going to cost is typically behind them. And so the rest of the project runs much more smoothly. The relationships strengthen. and the project is built as a collaborative team effort. And ultimately, the client is super happy at the end. Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. This episode is brought to you by BQE, the makers of BQE Core, Systems and Standard Operating Procedures. You already know that that's how to build a profitable business and find the freedom you want. You need systems and procedures. But you struggle with choosing which systems you need most and how to implement those systems quickly so you can get back to doing what you love most. The Designing Your Business Masterclass series was created by acclaimed architect and business consultant Douglas Teeger to help fellow architects and engineers run their firms more profitably while maintaining a healthy work-life balance. Douglas grew from a solo practitioner to become managing partner of his 30-plus person firm and then later sold his firm so he can do what he does today, helping architects be more successful at Teeger Consulting. On the third Wednesday of every month, Douglas dives deep into an essential topic that will strengthen the profitability of your firm and make it sustainable for growth in the years to come. Register now for the next Designing Your Business Masterclass with Douglas Teeger at bqe.com/masterclass and start implementing powerful systems for the profitability you need and the freedom you want. Every live masterclass session includes AIA continuing education credit, and when you visit bqe.com/masterclass, you'll have access to the full library of past sessions on demand. The Designing Your Business Masterclass is free, and it's brought to you by our friends at BQE, the makers of BQE Core, the software that makes it easy to manage your projects and people for maximum productivity and ultimate profitability. Register now for the Designing Your Business Masterclass at bqe.com/masterclass. That's bqe.com/masterclass. This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. There's a lot to love about being an entrepreneur architect, right? But trying to figure out your financials on your own is not one of those things. Luckily, there's FreshBooks, the all-in-one accounting solution that's built for business owners like us. FreshBooks takes all the not-so-fun parts of running a business, from building and tracking invoices to managing online payments to organizing expenses, and automates them with features like the new digital bills and receipts scanner, saving you up to 11 hours per week in the process. 11 hours. FreshBooks has your back at tax time, too. It's almost tax time. With a ton of reports to choose from, you'll know exactly where your business stands, and you can easily hand the keys over to your accountant so they can take over when it's time to reconcile everything for the year. Try FreshBooks. Try FreshBooks for free for 30 days. No credit card required. It's free. Go to freshbooks.com/architect. freshbooks.com/architect to get started today. That's freshbooks.com/architect. So, what will you do with your 11 more hours each week? This episode is brought to you by RCAT.com. We all have that one story, that one project that had such a unique situation that it required a solution that you had rarely considered before. We share these stories in private professional circles with our friends and our colleagues, but there has never been a collection of these stories of conflict and triumph all in one place. Until now. Detailed is a podcast series that features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who share their insights and expertise as they highlight some of the most complex, interesting, and oddball building conditions that they have ever encountered, and the ingenuity it took to solve them. Join host Charisse Lakeside, aka CSI Kraken, a senior specifications writer at RDH Building Science, as she uncovers lessons learned to help you navigate similar challenges that may arise in your next project. Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. Listen and subscribe right now at rcat.com/podcast. That's rcat.com/podcast. ARCAT.com/podcast. Detailed. Every building has a story. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. You hit the number that you set them up for, that expectation up front, and now at the end, they're happy because they have the project. The project went smoothly. The flip side of that is to do it the other way and make the client really happy up front because the number is what they thought it was going to be, and then knowing all along that it's going to go up and up and up and up. And so now that pain that could have happened in the beginning and the client could have gotten over it now happens in these incremental little bursts throughout the project when the next change order comes through. There's another conflict and the relationship is degraded, another conflict. And at the end, they have their project, they paid the same amount, but the relationships are broken.
Yeah, I took over a project once for a general contractor who died. And it's a crazy story because it was actually my boyhood home where my father and mother had their architectural and interior design practice for a good part of my life. And I found out from people that worked for the GC that his perspective on the project was that there was a lot of missing information on the drawings, and that he would sort of come in with an attractive price, knowing that when those drawings got fleshed out and completed, that he would be able to get a lot of change orders. And that was exactly what you were speaking of as a literal, just sort of business approach.
It's a model, right? And some contractors use that model and other contractors use the model that you have. My experience and my best projects, not only the best designed projects, but the best project process has always been partnering with the contractor early on, getting a realistic estimate early on, having that estimate be revised throughout the process, that relationship building throughout that process. And so when you get to the construction part, everybody's on the same page. Everybody knows what's going to cost. The relationships are the same, you know, that they're strong, because that's a big piece of it, right? Are the relationships between architects and general contractors, and the mindset of, you know, when that big crisis comes, because there always are crises in the middle of projects, right? That's another expectation that needs to be set with clients, that that's going to happen. That's part of the process. But when you have a team, a collaborative partnership, those crises become much more easily managed than when you don't have a collaborative team and everybody's pointing fingers at one another. It's a much different model.
Our approach early on was, you know, we can please an owner one time.
Right.
And maybe in 5 years, they might recommend us to a friend. But if we please the architect and they have a really enjoyable collaborative experience, one, you know, just the fact that the GC and the owner and the architect are still talking to each other at the end of the job
right.
is often extraordinary. But if the architect, you know, lives through the experience and enjoys it, then they can just be a constant source of new projects. So we've always emphasized trying to, you know, build relationships with the design community. And sometimes, that becomes a tricky place for us because it's a dance that we have to dance, because often if there's a situation we're in because, let's say, there was an incomplete aspect of the design that, caused a change order or a problem or something, in order for us to explain ourselves or defend a change order, if we didn't care about the relationship with the architect, the classic general contractor thing is to sort of, speak the facts, but not necessarily worry about doing it in a tactful way that could burn a bridge.
Right.
So we find ourselves often sort of in this tight spot where we may need to say some things to protect ourselves, but we have to do it in a very tactful way to not, risk the relationship between a client and the architect being harmed in any way, right?
Right.
And I love the three-legged stool of architect, contractor, owner, which is why I'm not a huge fan of the design build thing, because in our world, the architect is supervising and observing our work to make sure that we don't take any shortcuts for the client. But at the same time, we're often tasked with keeping an eye on the design team to make sure that the budget can be attained that we all agreed on. So it's a checks and balances in a mutual way, which can be a really enjoyable experience. Like, we have architects that will call us in early, and maybe they'll bring in like the structural engineer, and we'll have some rough schematic concepts, but we'll kick it around like from a means and methods and building efficiency perspective of like, we kind of know the owner wants to spend this much money. How can we do this? Kicking around ideas. And to me, that feels awesome because we're not just a commodity that whoever's the low bidder or the appropriate bidder gets the job, but like any GC that's around can do the job. Often when there's like an award to a project, it's much more about the design than it is about the contractor, unfortunately. You know, there's sort of the stigma that the GC is replaceable with the next guy. And we really enjoy when our participation is valued and we can collaborate with the team, especially from a very early stage. And, we consult on obviously pricing, means and methods, engineering. Like sometimes we'll be tasked with doing earth retention or waterproofing, which can sometimes be very tricky. Assisting with all the information for the permit process. And we found that the best projects are when the owner is trusting enough to be able to commit to a general contractor in the very early stages of the process so that the GC is invested in participating because they're part of the team. And it ends up sort of fast tracking the process and getting that really great chemistry of that collaboration from the get go.
Yeah, absolutely.
It does take a lot of sort of trust, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The trust is critical. It is both for general contractors and architects that the owner trusts us to do what we do. And that's a hard thing to do, right? Because trust is earned. And if somebody doesn't know you, that's something that you have to, you earn over experience, right? So your reputation helps you bring trust, but also the way you handle yourself in situations build trust. And so by architects and contractors partnering up, right, you can build those relationships. You can start to learn to trust one another. And the owners can trust you. Our best projects have been the ones that the owner has trusted us to design our best work, right? Gives us a budget, say, this is what I need to spend, this is what I want to build, now go do it, right? And don't second guess the architect or don't second guess the contractor, let us do what we do. And those projects always come out the best. They're the best designed, they're the best built, and they have happy clients at the end. But that's difficult sometimes to find that.
I think that architects, because of maybe from an ego perspective, want to be able to tell the client that they know what stuff costs, right? Because if you've been doing it long enough, maybe you should know that, right? Maybe. But as we know, the last 2 years, how would you be really aware of these dramatic commodities if you're not the one that's hiring all the subs and hearing all the stories? But my father was pretty unusual. His name was Seymour Goldberg, not Bertrand. But he, if his clients asked him to tell them what a project would cost, his stock answer was, talk to a contractor because I don't know what things cost. I'm an architect. And, you know, that's disappointing for the client to hear. But kind of like you said, you got to either like face the music now or later. But I think that a lot of architects would prevent themselves from getting into a bind, which has ended in many, many lawsuits where the client's upset that the architect misled them on what the project was going to cost. And the client decides to either cancel the project and doesn't want to pay the architect. I mean, how many times does that happen, right? But I thought it was pretty brave of my father to just say, I don't know what it costs. I'm an architect. And, you know, that's pretty rare, I think, for an architect to be that honest. And why put yourself in a spot to, you know, profess to be an expert on what construction costs when you're an architect?
Yeah. I agree with you. And that's it. I think that is the correct answer. Your father's answer was the correct answer. I don't know. I'm the architect. That's a question for the general contractor. That's a perfect opportunity to earn trust with a client, right? Being honest that,
right,
that's not my position. I don't know. Let's go find a contractor who knows, and then introduce them to a contractor who knows. And allow that contractor to do their thing, right? That earns trust with the contractor and starts to build that relationship. And so it's much about trust, right? And earning trust. Do you have advice for the architects who are listening on how to, or maybe let me position the question this way. Are there specific things that you do as a general contractor when you meet a new architect to communicate the way you work, right? Because we were talking earlier about the differences between contractors or among contractors, and you are the contractor that architects are looking for. So is there a specific way that you can quickly to communicate that to an architect?
Well, the first thing I would say, maybe it's a little corny, but that we want to be a collaborator with them. And, you know, make the experience an enjoyable experience. So because
that's not corny at all. That's exactly what architects want to hear.
I mean, building, and I tell clients this, you know, I've seen multiple projects literally end in divorce before the project's even over because it can be extremely stressful.
Yeah.
But I tell people on the front end that, you know, building a project is a luxury and it can be a really fun, awesome experience of seeing something come from design, from a blank page to becoming a building is awesome. And we should all enjoy doing it together. And at the end of the day, end of the job, like feel like, you know, we've had clients that like call us the architect and our team, like the dream team, through the project and just love it. And then afterwards be like, oh, I miss my dream team. I mean, that's exactly. Awesome.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And so it's like, take a minute to realize that, like, even though you're going to have to make thousands upon thousands of decisions, and it's going to be anxiety provoking, because you don't know if you pick X, Y, and Z, that each one of those decisions might be a good decision in isolation. Obviously, the composition of those things all together might not be a success, or it might be amazing, but that's why it's one of the reasons it's stressful, right? But you want to enjoy it and have good chemistry of the team. So for a young architect, or, you know, an architect that wants to have an enjoyable experience, I would say trust, and also, you know, do the things you do well, but admit the things that you need others to help with, and sort of bring in the team, you know?
Yeah, respect others the way you want to be respected. I mean, you want to be given the opportunity to do what you do best. Do the same for the others on the team. Allow the contractor to do what they do best, and let the owner do what they do best, and the project will come out beautifully.
It's kind of corny, but we have this glass panel in our stairwell with our logo, and I had three words under it. It was patience, trust, and honesty, which it's corny, yeah, but I really think that in the long run, if you're all those things, that someone's going to want to reach out and work with you again.
Patience, trust, and honesty. That's the formula. The formula for a successful project. Jake, I appreciate you spending some time with me here. This has been a really interesting conversation. I've enjoyed it. I wanted to ask you, what's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I would say, for themselves personally and for their staff, is to really explore and experience building outside of the theoretical of, like, physically. Yeah, YouTube is an amazing avenue to learn about everything. I mean, everybody's like volunteering all this free information. I would just say, like, learning about actually how things are built from the nitty gritty of, like, the mason mixing up the mortar and how he's applying it to the bricks, and to, you know, how the carpenter's framing a roof is, like, just, you know, I like the fact that you took the time in your career to explore that side of it, so that, you know, like in Germany, or in sort of an old school approach, you know, there'd be a long apprenticeship maybe for an architect to be working in construction, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think that that's such a, when I was in my first year out of college, I was doing everything myself physically, and I'd be like loading a dumpster with garbage and thinking to myself, what the hell am I doing? My friends are, you know, have these corporate jobs, and I'm thinking, like, I'm working as a laborer schlepping garbage. But those early years of my construction experience are what was the foundation of everything that I do today. You know, if a plumber or an electrician or a mason tries to tell me something, I know what they're talking about because I've physically done it. So it just, people know that about me. You know, they're not going to try to, like, pull the wool over my eyes, which, you know, you can get a lot of from tradespeople. So I think just, like, paying your dues by learning about physical construction is a great foundation for a general contractor or especially an architect.
Yeah, that's great advice to just get out there and get out into the construction field and get your hands dirty. Just do some of it. Watch it. Watch others do it. But also you, get out there and do it. Go mix some concrete. Go lay some bricks. Right. Go lay some tile.
It's easy to criticize like how much somebody says, how many hours somebody says it's going to take to physically do something. But if you actually go to try to do that thing yourself and you're like, oh my God, I thought it'd be done 3 days ago. It's like, I get it, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Great advice. His name is Jake Goldberg. The company is Goldberg General Contracting Incorporated in Chicago. Go check out the website, GGC, Goldberg General Contracting, GGCinc.net, GGCinc.net is the website. We'll have links to that on the show notes. Jake, I've really enjoyed our time today, getting to know you, getting to understand where you've come from. Talking a little bit about how general contractors and architects can build better businesses, can build better projects by being more collaborative. It's been a lot of fun, and I appreciate you coming by here today and sharing your knowledge at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks for thinking of us, and I really enjoyed it too. Great to talk to you, Mark.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a rating, write a review, go write a review. I would love to know what you think of this podcast, and it helps other architects find us. So go do 5-star rating if you like it, share, write a review, I'd love it, and share a link to this episode with a friend, because that's how we've grown. That's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands of architects throughout the world, just like you. Thank you to our sponsors, RCAT, FreshBooks, and BQE for their support of this episode. I ask you to support them because they support us. And if they're supporting us, they're supporting you. So go support them. Got it? Go support our sponsors. Links to our sponsors. So you can click on those links and go right to them. Links to our sponsors and all the resources we shared today are available at the show notes for this episode at entrearchitect.com/podcast. All the shows are there. entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows. I think there are 11 of them there now. Go there, gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. And I hope you're going to join us in Austin November 1st through November 3rd, 2022. Those are the dates for the Entree Architect Community Annual Meeting, our first ever live and in-person conference for you, the small firm architect community. Visit entrearchitect.com/annual meeting right now to learn more. That's entrearchitect.com/annual meeting, and I will see you in Austin in November. Don't miss this. This is going to be great. entrearchitect.com/annual meeting. It's a conference for you, small firm architects. Thank you for listening today to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. Love, learn, and share what you know.